Where were you on your last birthday? And keep on backtracking. On the previous one, on the previous one, on the previous one. Then, what happens? Where were you on your birthday 30 years ago? That's again the Vedantic point of view. That is, you cannot visualize your non-existence. And therefore you must have been,
in existence
somewhere. What? We don't know.
At the same time they'd say that it's through that very thing that can't imagine its non-existence that you can't touch the self anyway.
Okay, but that means you were in existence before. You can adopt one or the other of the two theories. They are both theories. One is, you know this biological fact, don't you? That every woman, whether or not you have had babies, any doctor here? Where is the nurse? How many eggs does a... And out of that, one by one is released. One a month or two a month. How many eggs are there in the ovaries? Total? Are you? If you look up the medical book, you'll see. Something, right at birth, you are endowed with so many. It's just a phenomenal amount. And from that, one by one, or two are released as you go along. It is possible in the same way that the Divine Mother has about a few hundred thousand billion eggs in her, with her already, and she goes on releasing a few thousand per day, and we are all born. But we were all there. That is, in that theory, according to that theory, you did not have a previous incarnation. Okay, that's a Christian point of view. You now, right now, you were created afresh from the stock of ovaries. It's one point of view. The other point of view is that you existed before as a person, as a personality. But it is not possible to conceive of a non-existence, of a prior non-existence. And therefore they say that you are existence. It's not such a sound theory, but again it satisfies a curiosity and answers a few questions. That since you cannot conceive or visualize your own non-existence, the essence of your being is existence. That's easy, my dear. Never mind, but you can see another body lying dead. And that's all. You take a picture of, ask somebody to take a picture of yourself lying down and cut that thing out and stick this thing on. You can see this body lying dead. That's not difficult. It's one of the Buddhist meditations. You will come to that in a few days' time. That is possible, but at that moment you are seeing the dead body. That is not to say that you had vanished into thin air. You are the one that sees that body lying dead. It's very much like somebody seeing an amputated arm outside. That's all. No problem. These are all similar. One is horrendous and the other is so pleasant. pregnant woman has the baby built into her or building into her, and then one fine morning the nurse holds the baby in front of her. That's been cut off from her. This is one kind of amputation. And the other one is when something happens to my arm or leg, that is cut, amputated, and then some doctor holds it in front of me, okay, I can see it. That merely shows that you are not so terribly caught up in this body. But you, as you, are an existent entity. A reason why some of the Oriental philosophers too do not accept a sort of reabsorption into the cosmic consciousness. They say no. Forever and ever you will exist as an individual, as a liberated individual. Whereas now you are bound and limited, miserable. When you attain self-realization, you will stay with God and overcrowd his place. Create a problem for him. But you are not going to disintegrate. That is another point of view. And the other fellows say that you don't come to nothing, but you become everything. You merge in the totality. Why is it that boys take entirely after their mother? Girls take care of their father. The father is a very quiet. Very quiet, soft spoken. You met he, for instance, is a very good mother to the children, but they are.
It's much more prevalent now in Western civilization because men are much more going into child care than
women. I'm not sure. You are merely saying they are going into, which means it was about zero.
Oh, indeed.
About 50 years ago. Now it is about 0.3%. It's nothing. There are, as I say, exceptions, but it's a rule. And strangely enough, I have heard this from quite a number of young women themselves, that the one thing that is most spiritually satisfying for a woman is to be able to feed someone. Right? Having said this, you can go to India and you can go to the ashrams where very, very often it's the man who prepares the food and serves. There is a distinct difference. I'm not criticizing them, they are great people, wonderful people. But there is a distinct difference. The man may be a giver, but he is not a nourisher. It's not there. That tenderness is not there. There may be some women who are not tender either. That's, again, there are exceptions. But genetically and biologically, this thing is just not there in the man. The man can care for his child in a certain way, but not as caring. So bearing, carrying, caring, it's all the mother's job. I may care, care means only worry. Well, it's very doubtful that I can handle a baby. And even so, the husband may very well care for his wife, almost treating her as another baby. But it's not the same. If I have a wife and she falls ill, I'll probably call a doctor and hire a nurse. But if you have a husband and he falls ill, you may hire a nurse and you may hire 6 attendants, but you would be there day and night. That I don't think a man is capable of it. I don't know why.
I think it's probably that sort of confusion of what the various sexes are capable of, and that causes a lot of resentment between them.
The resentment is because there is always the feeling that the devil is not given its due. That's why I said it could be a male grumble or a male grouse or a female grouse. We feel that we are not appreciated for what we are. You feel you are not appreciated for what you are. That's a different, that's politics. Certain things are distinctly feminine and certain things are distinctly masculine. And I don't think this can be mixed. They are still trying to figure out an androgynous creature, which is a fusion of male and female, or neither male nor female, not exactly like a hermaphrodite, which is unfused combination. Hermaphrodite is half male, half female, but androgynous is together, blended. And they even say, especially according to the Tantra, that is what they are looking for. The internal fusion of the male and the female, so that you become a total person, neither one nor the other. But I don't know how successful that such an androgynous creature would be.
Males that have these female characteristics, for example, or females like myself that have male characteristics comparatively to women. And I object to being pushed into a wholly female role. And I know, many male friends of mine, very effeminate males, are accused of homosexuality and etc. and laughed at because they love nothing better than sewing, cooking and feeding people. Mm-hmm. And I think they're the people that are objecting to sex.
These are the exceptions, not the rule.
Maybe because I'm part of a minority, they don't appear a minority to me.
Why bother about minority or majority? It's possible to see these characteristics as being predominant in a male, and the other characteristics are predominant in the female. There are exceptions, of course, that's all.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that these exceptions are outcasts.
Yeah. I think they just get a hard time of it.
That's because we keep judging people, which is a ridiculous thing to do. It's one thing to see, it's another thing to judge. I give you one example of a father who is a mother to his children. I see that, but there's nothing to judge. He's a beautiful person, he's a beautiful man. He's the father, no doubt. not the mother. And yet he is capable of looking after his children, as a mother looks after the children. Why not? So, he is an exceptional character, in as much as being a man, he has the tenderness of a woman. And it is possible for me to look at you in the same way and see that being a girl, you have the faculties of a boy, which is an addition. It's not a slur. Why not appreciate people like that?
I sort of see that as a goal in life, that everyone, to be a total person is to...
That's it. That is the androgynous thing. To, I don't know how far it will be successful.
Adding to your capabilities.
Quite right. That's perfectly right. On the other, at the other end of the scale is another experiment conducted by someone in India. This person became a Swami and he had some psychic powers and spiritual powers, and they called him God. Even now they call him God. And he also concurred with the early Christian tradition, or even the Hindu tradition, that the fall of man was the influence of the woman. So the female is the downfall of man. This is the axiom, you don't question that. Now, it seems, first of all, he decided that since he wanted to be totally pure as a man, you know the Brahmacharya ideal, totally pure as a man, as a celibate, that he should not have anything to do with females. So for some time he banished anything female in his environment. No women were allowed. Even the pictures of goddesses were removed from his apartment, and so on. Having lived successfully in this manner, and your stock shoots up if you are able to do a thing like this. In India, this is greatly prized. And strangely enough, if I declare today that I will not see a female, and at best, you can install a big mirror there and all of you can sit there and look at me. There will be millions in that room, of females. They have such an attraction for
somebody
who rejects them. Right. And... So, suddenly, this Swami realized that, good grief, though I have banished woman from my thoughts and feelings and so on, this body is still a product of male and female combination, union. So, obviously, there is a lot of... female blood, female element in every cell of my body. So what kind of celibate am I? What kind? I'm not a pure male. How does one achieve that? It seems he went on a long fast, long fast, and after a certain number of days, 30 or 40 days, one day he declared that I am. From the bone, all the female element has been removed. Then he said, now hereafter I can see any of you, male, female, it doesn't matter at all. My eyes, you all become...
male.
You all become male, yes. Because since the femaleishness, even in your eyes, the cells of the eyes and then the rods in the retina have been removed, so I cannot see any female anymore. so.
I think I'm still in the Mediterranean.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Danko, they all worshipped him as God.
I think I must have met a few people that read his books, so because I knew a lot of people who used to think that that's what yogis were. They could walk around and see a street full of people and they were all men. They couldn't see them. That was Brahmacharya.
Yes, men in two different shapes. I'm coming back to that. We see these as characteristics, but then no one is a total male, no one is a total female. And then you see the person for what he or she is, without judging. Why should we judge? Where is the need for judging? One sees this as the predominant characteristics of the male and predominant characteristics of the female. And there is no harm in seeing these as such. He flourishes a beard, he is a man. A man grows a beard. She also might, but then... You see the point? I would say all right, even if she has a little bit of whiskers, okay, it's nice, it looks nice. Leave it alone. But you see that that is not a female characteristics. That's all. Having seen this, having appreciated the differences, do not judge. That way we enjoy life, we enjoy the diversity of creation without getting trapped, sucked into it. That's what the yogis are supposed to do, not to visualize something which doesn't exist. See things as they are without judging. It is when you judge you get involved in it. It is in judgment that you get caught. Without judgment, there is no trap. Even a little boy might see me or a shaven-headed person. He may say, hey, look at him, look at him. Or you go to India, they might say, hey, look at her, look at her, look at her hair. Little children. But they point out to a strange color in the hair, a strange texture of the hair, a strange color of the skin. But they are not judging you. They are merely saying, you are different from my mother or my sister. In their heart, there is absolutely no ill will against you. There is no criticism, nothing at all. But they are able to see the difference. This girl is different from my sister. I think one must distinguish between these two. Judge not, definitely. That's the final commandment. Because the moment you judge, the ego gets stronger. And you are trapped. That's a trap. Whereas if we can see the diversity, as diversity as this is this color, that is that color, this is the other color. Okay. But all three are the same materials and they also, the price tag is about the same. That's it. One is not superior to the other, one is not inferior to the other. But this color is not the same as that. What is the difficulty here?
Criticism is sort of the same as judgment, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Someone, no. Someone pronounced that word in a funny way, criticism, which is, from my point of view, very sensible because it is a C and that's a C2. And why should one C be pronounced with a ka and the other C with a sa? So he made it both ka, criticism. And then suddenly I thought, my God, I didn't notice this before. This is another religion, another cult. Criticism. That is the religion whose fundamental tenet is to find some fault everywhere. It's a religion. Why should we join that religion? And or why not take it to the other extreme and find fault with that itself? All, but I don't know, you must know better. Does the word criticism necessarily involve bad judgment? No. For instance, literary criticism could be very favorable too. But it does mean judgment to some extent. Need not be, but unfortunately it has come to mean judgment. One can distinguish between judgment and description. Again, criticism involves both these. Description as well as judgment. It's possible to describe a thing without judging it. And judging brings in categories of good and bad, fundamentally. And better, this is better than that. Description can avoid all this. You can describe smoking. How the tobacco is grown, how it is blended and how it is cured and all that, and what is added to it and how it is rolled and how it is marketed and how it is smoked and what happens when a person smokes a cigarette. The good things, burns up fat or prevents a person from growing fat or moves the bowels, that sort of thing. Leave there. There is no good and evil here. Or spoils lungs and leads to lung cancer. These are mere facts, factual descriptions. You can describe alcohol and its effects, what they call scientifically, which means you merely state facts. Describe them as they are. But if you are watchful, careful, it is possible that even while describing, you are biased, which means there is a judgment lurking in the corner, whether or not it is expressed. It is possible to describe everything without getting screwed up one way or the other. Possible.
Really is vigilance, though, isn't it?
Quite. That is mere description. And then the judgment. This is better than that. A glass of grape juice is better than a glass of wine. That is when you are entering into the field of criticism, of judgment. Criticism covers all this. And it is possible to train one's mind in such a way that it merely describes without passing judgment. I thought you would catch me there. While I...
I'm being non-critical.
Thank you. You are very good. Because while I am saying that, there is a tick, 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 tick behind me saying, this is better than finding fault. This attitude is better than the other one. The other one is defective, evil.
But even next step then, back when you say, okay, you can be aware to an extent that one's critical and that's judgment, then the next thing is then even having that your point of view.
Exactly, I was coming to that.
Just the way I looked at something was okay to tell you, but it's not because it's...
I was coming to that. So that that total absence of bias is possible only if you do not have your point of view at all. That is possible only if the you itself is seen to be non-existent. Then you become a Buddha.
And if you know, you just spend your time repeating the mantra. Just anything else is virtually...
Yeah, but then the moment you start thinking, the whole game wakes up again.
But that's what the mantra is for, isn't it?
The mantra is for avoiding grosser manifestations of this criticism or judgment. Merely to avoid the grosser manifestations of criticism or judgment. But I don't know. I don't know if thought can function without creating all this problem. The moment you start thinking, this thought is better than that thought is, even when you say, the mantra is meant to avoid all this, means you are saying that this thing is rubbish. I don't want it. In a very subtle way, this is not very gross, in a very subtle way, you are condemning these thoughts, the other thoughts.
And then you're fighting it.
You're fighting it all the time. So, if you realize that thought functions only on that basis, thought functions only on the basis of logic and reason, logic and reason necessarily have to create a division. Reason, this is reasonable, this is not reasonable. This is good, this is bad. This is the beautiful, this is ugly. That's reasoning. That's how reasoning functions. Logic, again, this is meaningful, this is not meaningful. This is cause, this is effect. Division is the very function of logic and reason and thinking, thought. Thought cannot function in an undivided state. And when thought arises, immediately there is a this and that. And when this and that have formed, again, unless you are a Buddha, thought is going to suggest that this is better than that. That is a better statement than this is worse than that. Hmm?
Yeah,
you know the difference between the optimist and the pessimist? That's it. Huh? Either it is half empty or half full. So, you can say that this Swami is better than the other Swami, which means he's good. You accept that that man is good, but this man is better. Or you can turn it the other way around and say that that man was worse. he is bad enough that that fellow is even worse. So now we are choosing between these two, which is a better attitude, again judgment. This is a positive approach, this is a negative approach, this is an optimistic view, this is a pessimistic view. So between these two, choose the optimistic view because it's better than the pessimistic view, or the pessimistic view is worse than the optimistic view. All view is bad, all point of view is bad, but to have this point of view is worse. Is it possible to drop this whole thing at all? So completely and so thoroughly. It's not impossible, sure. Because, again, the yogi would probably point out that in sleep, you are free from all this. Is it possible, we ask, to live as if we are constantly asleep. Possible. Example, a madman. He doesn't judge. Impaired judgment is one of the criteria for madness. Impaired judgment is one of the criteria for madness. And if you read these two lines together, the Swami has impaired judgment, and put it on a bookmark at a place where the Bible opens, judge not. Then you suddenly see that this is what he is doing. He is not judging anybody, anywhere or anything. That means he is a true devotee of Christ, true disciple of Christ. But society calls him mad. So, to come back to what we were saying, such a thing is possible. Though, by the very nature of the way society is constructed, you would be called mad. Then? And therefore, the Bhagavatam describes such a person in exactly the same way. Bala unmatta pishachavat. What is the nature of the enlightened person? He behaves like a child. Bala. Unmatta. Mad. Demented. Unmatta sounds like demented. It's a demented state. Pishachavat, goblin. And therefore it is very difficult to understand. Because how to live in a society which functions on judgment and free yourself from judgment? It's possible. It's possible because it is found in sleep, in your own life, and it is possible to see that the madman or the child does not judge. Is it not possible for me to live such a life? Yes, sure. But when you reach that point, these people call you mad. How does such a person function in society? There's another description. Mukanda Bajiropamaha. How does such a yogi live in society? Is it possible? Yes. But he lives as one who is deaf, dumb and blind. Then it is possible. I think Buddha also says the same thing. A wise man should live in this world as if he is ignorant, he is stupid. Anybody can trick you. Anybody can trick you. They could tell you that, if don't you know the difference between this and that? Yeah. And don't you see that she's more beautiful than the other person? Yeah. Everybody starts laughing. This man is crazy. Why? The obvious. To all these people, it is obvious. I'm much more beautiful than the other person. And yet this fellow says, he cannot see. Very crazy. People will make fun of you, sure. And when they do that, you pretend that you are deaf. That's the unfortunate position of the enlightened person.
Hari Om Tat Sat.